What I'm going to do is have my fellow co-hosts introduce myself, and then we'll be getting into what our show is about today.
Hello, my name's Sam. I'm Cree Métis from Isle of Cross, Saskatchewan, or Sagittawak in our language. I grew up in Treaty 8 territory, which is the territory of the Dene Zaw, Cree, and Soto.
Hi, my name is Kaelin. I'm a settler Canadian of Irish heritage, and I grew up on the unceded territories of the Okanagan peoples.
And my name's Mitch. I'm a settler of various European descents, call myself a European mutt. I grew up on the unceded territories of the Stalo people, recognizing, of course, that our show takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam people. Many thanks to them for hosting our place of learning as well as our radio show. As many people know, as many of you probably know, there's a show called, or a video called What I Learned in Class Today that FNIS put on 10 years ago?
Back when it was FNSP.
FNSP.
First Nation Studies Program.
And it was a video of students in class experiencing just ridiculous ignorance and blatant racism from their classmates, just showing how little understanding there is, even at places like UBC. That is being redone right now by the new FNIS, no longer FNSP. We don't know exactly what they're going to do, so we're not going to speak to what they're talking about in that show, or because we'd probably do it incorrectly. But we wanted to kind of change the scope of what we were looking at from kind of ignorance and racism to look at what is it like to experience solidarity throughout life, at institutional levels, organizational levels, personal levels, all that stuff. And we're going to talk about, some of the issues, some of the problems, some of the kind of comedically terrible examples, probably, of, like, attempted solidarity, blatant ignorance, swing and misses sometimes. Anything to throw into that?
Yeah, I think the original What I Learned in Class Today was looking at anger and alienation you feel when you're an Indigenous student in the class. And I think I'm excited to do this show because it's going to be kind of looking at that narrative to what it feels like to feel solidarity from non-Indigenous folks year-round. And as an Indigenous person, that's important. I don't think this is talked about a lot. But I think it's also, this is not a how-to manual of how to be an ally, or even problematizing what it means to be an ally and the terminologies around allyship. So, yeah.
Awesome. So in this episode on solidarity and allyship, some people may be wondering, why is it that this conversation is being had on an Indigenous collective show? Why is it taking up airtime if it's centering around allyship or solidarity? And that's, that's a very good point, because these conversations may come up exhaustingly often for a lot of people. And I think the point of the conversations that we're trying to make is, what type of conversations, what type of actions are perhaps just exhaustive or insulting, or just wrongly put, that can really create a large burden for Indigenous peoples. Obviously, I can't speak to that. Being a settler, I can't speak to that very well. However, as a group, we may try. And this obviously isn't going to be a cookbook episode either, but it'll hopefully give a couple perspectives on it. And then at the same time, from perhaps not from a settler perspective, but in the eyes of some of the comments made during What I Learned in Class Today, some of those comments that the students made of, why am I always the person that has to take on some of these ignorant comments, or why is the professor looking to me for some of these ignorant comments when they can make rebuttals to these comments themselves? And so that may come up in our conversations. Although that has to be very carefully kind of maneuvered, so that you're not recentering settler voices. of course. And that's one of the reasons that I came to this show, and Sam and Kaylin will be speaking to their reasons as well. Is the reason I came onto the show was to listen and learn, because I know there were a huge amount of things that I needed to listen and to learn about. And I came here trying to help where I can and as I can, which is why I'm on this show. Of course, a lot of things we'll be talking about, some of the, you know, the errors people make, the ignorant comments that some people make, that I'll probably be criticizing this episode. I've definitely made those comments. I will probably make comments like that or do things like that again in my life, unfortunately. And I try as I go to learn and improve, knowing that it's a learning experience and that my, you know, colonial settler location on an unceded land is continuous and is not, like Kaylin said, is not this level that you reach and level up to and ever really let go. It's something that you have to constantly think about.
I keep thinking of the pre-talks we had before this episode, and Kaylin had mentioned that this episode shouldn't be the obligatory "this is an ally" episode. And I was like, yeah, totally. And then just kind of processing that, thinking like, well, is it the obligatory episode? And I think it is and it isn't. And I think it should be, because these conversations are important. They are exhausting and they are tedious. And I feel like I have them every other day of my life. But I think it's good, because we need to talk about it, and the only way anything happens is with communication and open communication and talks of accountability and what it looks like, and just even facilitating it and listening to it. You need to be reminded that there are white people out here who are willing to take up this conversation, because it's worse when it's not talked about, and it's awkward when it's not talked about, and you just have people running around being like, hey, I'm an ally, and you're just like, well, let's dissect that a little bit, let's investigate that. And I think the only way things happen is when people talk about them and when they are in action. So I don't know, maybe it is the episode that always has to happen. I don't know, but I'm not upset about it.
Yeah, and I think it, like you're saying, it is about the space that you occupy. Like, it's different if we have a single episode about allyship and solidarity around all the other amazing episodes that we've been able to host. And I guess it is true that the collective, like, is made up of, like, Indigenous and non-Indigenous students. So there is space. I just want to, always have us bear in mind that we don't want that to become central. And yeah, just think of the ways that we can try to prevent that. And like thinking about what we learned in class today, I was thinking of some of my own experiences in like the First Nation Studies program classes and things where, you know, issues would arise, like Anishinaabe scholar Leanne Simpson would talk, and talking about her book Dancing on Her Turtle's Back, where she's explicitly framed it to be for an Anishinaabe audience. And then at the end of the class, the first question that gets asked is like, well, I'm a settler, what can I do? So there's like, there's issues there. Like, so I think there we can have a conversation about ways that we can talk about this better, because it is going to be talked about. So we, like Sam's saying, can't ignore it, like pretend like it becomes the elephant in the room. Like, these are issues we need to talk about, and we need to think through ways that we can talk about them more ethically and practice them more ethically. So in that way, that's what I'm bringing to this episode, and that's what I hope will come of an episode like this, is just, thinking through the ways that we can, begin to discuss these questions that are critical to, like, to be, like, if you identify as a settler or if you identify as Indigenous, because I think that often part of the power of being a settler that you, like, are imbued by the settler colonial, like, nation state and society, is that you can think that you are somehow divorced from the issue of, like, the fact that you're on Indigenous lands, and like that you are always complicit in that and always participating in that. So it's something that you need to be able to deconstruct. And like, so when we talk about Indigenous issues, I like to think about like, well, those aren't just like, as a settler Canadian, I'm also imbricated with those issues. I'm also a part of that, right? And I'm like, me and my family and friends are a part of the history of settler colonialism. So I need to be able to think through that in like productive and ethical ways.
Why did you join the collective?
I joined the collective because Celia Volant told me.
Same. No,
yeah.
Same as heck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the collective, I obviously don't want to speak for a collective because that's very problematic, but I look at the collective as kind of a great place to dissect or investigate what allyship and solidarity can look like. Because, as it's been said, it's a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous folks. And there's a lot of really good work that happens. There's a lot of really good discussions. And I think having non-Indigenous people be a part of the collective is good. I know there's been some critiques about it, about why is it called the Indigenous Collective when there's non-Native people. And I think it's just kind of looking at just the contemporary reality and understanding that we are constantly in personal relationships with non-Indigenous folks, be it kind of out in our own lives or in our intimate lives. And I think it's just important that there are bodies that can take up research or bodies that can take up conversations that we are just really fucking sick of having.
Yeah, and we have been able to do some, like, interesting things and talk about some, you know, things that needed to be talked about. And, yeah, I think that also goes to the notion, like, of devaluing certain work that isn't, like, explicitly labeled activists or, like, allyship work, right? Like, that we, like, as a part of the collective split between Indigenous and non-Indigenous students are, like, participating in that practice. We're doing that, right? And, like, hopefully, and, like, that's why it's important to have an episode where we kind of take a step back and think critically about if we feel we're doing it properly. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to bear in mind, yeah, that there's a lot of work that gets, yeah, kind of framed as though it isn't that important, solidarity work, because we do it as, like, friends, right? Mm-hmm. But that's also, like, work that we're constructing, like, and trying to think through the ways that we can, yeah, live better on these Indigenous lands.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here and listen to New Sage by Mob Bounce. Have a listen.
Some new sage, remain calm and collected when you rage. You're moving with the cool page, story of my life, song that I write. Take this book to a new page. The one you love is the universe that you make. You gotta give what you take to live a new way. Yeah, that's an IRA, so would you vibrate? Can go higher rates and just a power way. So pride the hate off your chest, mate. This is not a chess game, you're not yelling out checkmate. My chest plate is made the blessed way. Palms up above my hair while I cover my flesh and jade. Dressed in pain, warriors always have the precious way. I got the reddest braids, not on my head this day. But in my reckless ways, I know I bet this pain. Cause I let this shame take away from the game. So I turn this mic up and spit this game. Everyone watches my bounce in the rain. I just like the video, you find me a plan in your brain. I'm not here to hurt you. Self is a process. Visions is a virtue. Gradual progress. Ah, yes. Trauma is silent, but I heard you. We are all stuck in these ruts. We are not nuts. We are all souls in the flux. Universal curve vibing with the crisp cuts. Old crows, young bucks, ux lux. You ain't gonna find you at the end of that bar of love. I see tears running down your door of love. Astrology gave me the right analogy. The stardust and that's the atomic is a galaxy. We are made of atoms, no fantasy. Everything is one and it's the ultimate reality. Disease came along with development. Manifest destiny where everything was heaven sent. Obsession with paper, history written clear. Started in the east, now it's here. I can see through the felt sense the beginning is near. Where things are not as they appear, like the white man depicting my crocodile tear. The oppression of a people for 500 years. You are the aliens and the terrorists. When will you see your exactly what you fear?
When will you see or exactly what you feel?
Welcome back to CITR, listening to Unceded Airwaves, part of the Indigenous Collective here at CITR. Many thanks to the Musqueam Nation and the Musqueam people for hosting the land that this university and that this radio show is taking place on. You just listened to New Sage by Mob Bounce, and we're going to come back, and Sam and Kaylin are going to talk to us about some of those, some more kind of problematizing and problematic aspects of the terms ally and working in solidarity and some of the issues that come up around that. So go ahead, Sam.
Before we begin our discussion, we want to talk about some terminology and really problematize, I think, some common terminology that exists around solidarity and allyship and contextualizing what it means to be an ally and challenging that terminology.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe I'll talk about, well, definitions are always kind of tricky and, like, we don't want to assert, like, unequivocal notions of what both allyship and solidarity mean. There are certain ways that we can start to think about allyship and start to problematize it in ways that hopefully can become productive. So a lot of the issues that arise from using the term ally kind of come from the fact that ally is often can be seen as an imposed term. And if you are asserting yourself as an ally, as a settler, without constructing the relationships to kind of do the work that's necessary for that to be meaningful, then it becomes really problematic. And so a lot of scholars have talked about the term consensual allyship, and that's based on a relationship that you have with the community, with individuals, as a kind of more productive way to foment like social change and to be aware of issues surrounding settler positionality when you're dealing with struggles for indigenous self-determination and other rights. So maybe we could talk about what some other productive ways of solidarity, like thinking through solidarity, are.
Mm-hmm. Before, I kind of want to back up a little bit and just come from, or just contextualize myself in this conversation as an indigenous person with two settlers on this radio show. I want to make it very clear that I only speak from my own experiences and I don't speak for other Indigenous people. And I think looking at allyship as an Indigenous person in terms of being an ally to nations that are different from mine, I want to make it very clear that I don't speak for anybody and that I think we could do an entirely other new radio show on Indigenous allyship with other Indigenous nations. But I just want to make that clear. But back to what Kaylin was saying. Yeah, I think when we're looking at solidarity and allyship, we have to remember it's not a race to innocence. So if you are identifying as an ally and you're joining Indigenous struggles, that doesn't necessarily separate you from settler colonialism or white supremacy, if you're white, and that there's a lot of work behind it, and that these are terminologies and they can be identifiers for you in spaces, but it doesn't mean you're innocent or not complacent in these kind of grand power structures and hierarchies.
And the race to innocence is an interesting thing to take up because as like a student who's involved in a problematic discipline of anthropology and who's like more and more become involved in Indigenous issues and politics, I struggled with where my voice is going to fit into those different narratives and those different struggles. But I think part of being like an ally, a term which like I'm already somewhat uncomfortable with, though, is the fact that we have to learn to live with that discomfort, that you never are absolved of the responsibilities that you have being a settler on unceded territories. So living with the discomfort and making it productive is something that, like, you constantly need to be challenging yourself, thinking about your position, the way that you're privileged, especially as a white settler, and ways that you can kind of try to deconstruct, like, a settler colonial complex.
Yeah, if you're comfortable, you're doing it wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, or you just don't, yeah, you're doing it wrong, or you just have no idea about the conversation. Yeah, like Kaylin's saying about kind of acknowledging and being aware of your privilege and your positionality, I feel like a lot of people, when they kind of come in and think of those of themselves as like an ally, it's kind of that semi kind of like white savior kind of mentality, and not to make that kind of like a really not to say it in like a really mean way or to be extremely criticizing, but I'm sure that like there's a lot of people that come in that feel that they want to help but just aren't aware of their positionality and aren't aware of what that is like to enter into those communities or try to enter into that space, and that can really it can be uncomfortable, and I'm guessing like exhaustive for a lot of indigenous communities. I'm just guessing to have people come in and just kind of barge their way into a community and not without really thinking about what their position is and what their history is to those communities as a settler on unceded land. So
yeah, and I think just to kind of recap, when we're talking about terminology and identifiers like ally, or if you say like, oh, I'm standing in solidarity with, they're not a way to describe yourself. They're not, you know, a part of your identity. They're action words. Like, they're relationships that you're saying you have to do. So to me, terminology is kind of pointless, and identifiers for people are kind of pointless in terms of allyship and solidarity, because to me it's all about the relationships you have and your actual work you're putting in. So I don't know. I just see a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm an ally, but really they just like to say they're an ally and do nothing to actually help. So, I mean, I think, yeah, like what Kaylin said and what Mitch said, they're not really, I don't care about the terms, to be honest. I just really don't care about the terms. I get really annoyed when people say they're an ally. I want to see the work. I don't want to see you identify.
Okay, so now that we're talking about the kind of the praxis of solidarity, we can start to outline like maybe what that looks like, and I'll maybe speak to like how I, in whatever way, try to practice solidarity. And I think it's important to bear in mind while we talk about this that like solidarity often is thought of in institutionalized activist spaces and public events, public spaces, but that solidarity also, and like most often actually, probably takes more importance in the intimate spheres of our life, and like how we negotiate relationships that can have the potential to replicate like kind of really problematic power structures and racism in like the intimate spheres. So that's kind of how I try to like Sam was mentioning earlier, talk about tread carefully and think about the work and the actions that you do, and that you can't just claim solidarity in a public space and not live that in your private life. Even if we think of these things as like maybe blurred, like that's a kind of a construction, that they're dichotomies in the first place. But I think that that's one important thing to bear in mind when we talk about solidarity and practicing solidarity, is it's not something that you do at a rally once a month, or you go and do and then go back to your regular life. It has to be something that becomes like ingrained in your everyday life. And it's funny to talk about it because it's always a struggle, and like, and I definitely, it's something that I always contend with, thinking that I don't participate enough in like direct actions, and that like I'm also troubled by the ways that like I have internalized a lot of like kind of colonial settler and like misogynistic structures of power, and trying to be self-reflexive of how I interact with like my friends and my partner and my family.
Like Kaylin was saying, when it's the public versus private, What I've seen and I've experienced a lot is allies come into spaces, like you're saying, like for a rally or for the specific moment in time. They enter that space and they do great work planning, or they do great work putting their bodies in direct action. But when it comes to the private, they have the option to leave these spaces, where in reality for Indigenous folks, we never leave those struggles. Like, I can think of like the Women's Memorial March. Like, it's amazing to see so many faces show up. But then I feel like a lot of folks get to leave at the end of the day and go home and, I don't know, like eat dinner and watch a movie. And then, you know, they did that. They get their like gold star for showing up and marching. But really, like, it's something that affects my life every day. It's something that I think about all the time and affects my family. And I think when we're talking about allyship, it's not even a blurred line. There is no separation between the public and the private. The work you do in action means nothing if you don't practice that in your personal relationships, especially if you have intimate relationships with Indigenous folks in your life, be it like a partner or a friendship or family members. Like, I don't know, it just means nothing to me if you're doing great action, you're doing great planning, you're doing great whatever, but then you still reenact those same power structures, the same colonial mentality with those who are close and personal in your life.
And I often worry, yeah, too, about how it works with visible activism and visible solidarity, and especially the ways, like you're saying, Sam, that, like, especially white men, for some reason, because it's been constructed as, like, abnormal to be stand in solidarity with, like, Indigenous women or with other communities, that they tend to get lauded, like, to an enormous degree, and then that the resistance and activism that, like, Indigenous women do is just kind of structured, like, seen to be as, like, natural. Like, that's just what's going to happen. But if a white man enters a space, he's going to be, like, accoladed for that. And like you say, at the end of the day, like, when I go to the march, at the end of the day, I get to go home, and I get to not have to, if I don't want to, I can not struggle with those things. So for me, solidarity then is, like, trying to hold that in mind and remain accountable to the people in my life that are affected by racism and have to struggle with settler colonialism every day and aren't privileged in the same way that I am. So I think that that's how I try to think through solidarity, but at the same time, it is also important to do. Like, that public work is also really critically important. But yeah, I think we can start to broaden how we understand solidarity and how we understand resistance and allyship.
Yeah, I like that you brought up accountability, because that's a huge part, and I think it's known, but it's not talked about, or it's not processed enough as what it means to be accountable, like accountable to the direct action you're doing, accountable to probably all like the really rad things allies are doing that help in kind of the broad spectrum, but accountability to your relations is integral, and it's something that's integral in Indigenous communities. So, like, my community, for Métis folks, our nations and our communities are built on kinship, and kinship means we're accountable to everybody, and not just humans, but accountable to all life forms, so animals and nature. And that idea of accountability and allyship is integral, absolutely integral.
And one thing I think about accountability is too, like, that I'm accountable to the, like, Indigenous, like, women in my life, but accountability also means holding the people, your family and your people, accountable as well, right? So I'm not accountable to, yeah, all the, like, strong women, like, Indigenous women in my life if I don't hold others accountable as well. And that's a big part of it. And that's how you, like, structure webs that, like, you know, are going to constantly challenge, like settler colonialism and heteropatriarchy and these things, by putting a foot down and, like, saying, like, that these are the things that, like, I'm not going to accept from wherever they come. It's not just on that one relationship. It has to spread out to all the relationships. And like you're saying, everything that you do in your life, you can't say, like, I'm accountable to, like, my friends and partner, but then just let, you know, I'm thinking of, like, some weird frat boy kind of thing, like, where you allow people to say or do things that you wouldn't do yourself. You have to hold those people accountable as well.
Yeah, it's really nice when white people take on shitty white people, and you just get to sit back and see some like good dragon happening, and you're just like sitting on the internet being like, damn, you go. I'm going to have a coffee and eat some popcorn and watch this play out.
And I think, well, that's part of the things you're thinking about is when you're speaking as a ally or whatever term you want to throw at it, it's like, when you're thinking about it, okay, yeah, am I speaking up in a way that's like appropriate, and you're just kind of like pointing out the obvious facts to people, you know, or I'm pointing out like their obvious blatant like ignorant remarks or racist remarks. And I also really liked what Kaylin said about being accountable to everyone in your life, because you know, it's easy to like to get in a Twitter argument or something like that, right? It's another thing to kind of like argue with your roommate or like talk to your parents or like recognize the role of like your grandparents or whatever family members, your family's history or you know, may have had in colonization, the very fact that you're here if you are a settler, and your role in that colonialism. And like that, I mean, that can seem difficult, but I think in comparison to the challenges that people who have been subjugated to colonialism face, I mean, having that conversation with like your roommate or your family members are most likely minimal to nothing in comparison. So I think that's something that a lot of people should really think about. And yeah, basically everything that Kaylin said, I don't need to say again because he said it, and I agree with everything he said. So
yeah, just take on your racist white uncle so we don't have to.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break, but we're going to be hearing from something a little different. We're going to be hearing from Sugluck, and it is Fall Away. So have a listen.
Follow away, I fall
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, taking place on the unceded lands of the Musqueam people. Coming back to our discussion around solidarity and allies and some of the problems around that, Sam, Kaelin, and I are going to kind of have a discussion around some of those problematic issues of terms and et cetera, and we're going to keep going in the conversation. We're going to be talking about some of the expectations that people might have going in and working as an ally or in solidarity or whatever it is, and how those might not exactly reflect the reality of what being an ally or working in solidarity actually is. Yeah, we're going to get into kind of the expectations that people might have of working in solidarity or being an ally, and how those expectations might not exactly line up with what that actually means. Because like we said before, you know, a lot of people might come in and just expect to be automatically welcomed or praised or like cheered on or something like that, and expect to maybe even like take a leadership role or like...
I think on one hand, it's kind of funny when people come in, and I try not to fault people, because I think for the most part, a lot of people enter these spaces and want to be allies. And they want to... It comes from a good place in their heart, and that's really respectable. But it's also kind of funny when people come in and they are just like immediately wanting to take leadership roles, or... I don't know. Maybe they're just like super type A and just want to organize everything themselves. I don't get it. It's kind of funny. But I think there's an expectation versus reality when it comes to solidarity and allyship. And if you're coming in expecting to kind of, like we talked about earlier, like absolve yourself from colonialism, like absolve yourself from white supremacy, or kind of get great accolades for just being that really good white person, then it's not right. And I don't know, I'm uncomfortable saying what's right and wrong, but it's just some auntie's gonna slap you down. That's what's gonna happen. And I think there's a reality aspect where when you come into these spaces, you should come in with no expectations and just tread carefully and lightly and listen. I think a big part of allyship, or I don't know, whatever you want to call it, is just listening and being prepared to be told you're not needed. And I think a lot of people, especially privileged people who have had their opinions, had their voices privileged over others for so long, be it like just institutionalized, being told that you're not needed or the work you want to do is not necessarily needed at that moment, can be really difficult and uncomfortable, like we talked about earlier. But that's a huge part, is just listening to the needs of whatever community you're working in. And that seems really basic and like you should already know that, but it's astounding how many people don't understand that.
And it can also be, it's that assumption that... That assumption that, of course I'm needed, and of course I should have this role, and of course, you know, like, I'm just this wonderful person going in, and I don't want to make fun of the perhaps good intentions that people have. I really shouldn't do that too much. I don't want to make too much fun of it, but yeah, the assumption that what you're doing is needed, or that you are really... Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, meant to go into that community or whatever, is something that people should just really, really think about and be very careful about, because it's...
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I never want to fault people who want to help. That's important. But I think we just need to come at this from a good way and really just examine what you're doing and why you're doing it. It takes a lot of self-reflection and a lot of, like, looking inside yourself and asking yourself a lot of questions. And that doesn't mean centering yourself or centering your needs or centering what you want. It just means that you really have to be a self-reflective person when you're coming into these spaces and really examine your own praxis and why you're doing it. And those questions are hard to ask and those questions are hard to answer, but that's just work. That's working. That's the work you have to put in.
Mm-hmm. And that, like, placing a stress on self-reflexivity is is really critical to, because the ways that, like, what we're talking about happen, you know, kind of insidiously as we talk on unceded airwaves, two settler men and one indigenous woman,
exactly,
talking,
right?
Talking about allyship, like, and what sometimes can seem like an obligatory talk, like discussion around allyship, like, oh, we've got to talk about this again and again and again, and the ways that that can recenter settler voices and settler concerns, like, well, what is the rule for us? What are we going to do, right? And there's issues around that if you don't remain, like, reflexive and constantly trying to approach it, like, from the best way that you can, and realize that, yeah, if you want to stand in solidarity on struggles around indigenous politics, that your voice is never going to be central, and your body and your presence isn't going to be central. You need to be there, constantly prepared to help in like we were saying, like, whatever is asked of you, and not to kind of impose your allyship and your supposed, like, expertise and knowledge. So, but it is, like, yeah, it's important to, like, constantly remain vigilant about, yeah, how easily, you know, like, this discussion could easily slip back into, like, talking about settler guilt and then, or issues like that, and then that just recenters and kind of runs kind of antithetical to the things that you say that you're pursuing in the first place. So,
I think another way, I don't know if it helps to use, like, colonial politics for terminology. It's a game of diplomacy. Like, when you look at two diplomats, a diplomat from one country is not going to go into another country and say, this is how we're going to do things and this is how you have to act. Like, relations between, specifically, I would like to, I don't know, say, between Indigenous nations and settler Canadians, it's a nation-to-nation relationship, and we are, I think, looking at different forms of diplomacy and maybe looking at forms of Indigenous diplomacy, and you are there to not necessarily talk for your people, but you're there to help and work.
Definitely very good points, Sam. Something I'm definitely going to keep in mind for myself, at the very least. We are going to listen to one more song before we get into final announcements and final thoughts. We're going to listen to Culture by Mob Bounce. I know we're playing them a lot. We like them around here for good reason. So have a listen.
Checks in, this justified oppression. Oh, we hold the line. resting it. We are the culture and we live in it. Together to make amends for the people who do wrong. Hopefully this is the path we are. We have creator's message, pass it along. We gather the song, music got the power to make the weakest strong. The bleakest is gone, mommy. We see the light in the dust, so it dawned on me that we are answering the prophecy. That's what our ancestors manifested for our babies. That's what our ancestors manifested for our babies.
Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, taking place in the unceded territories of the Musqueam people. If you just tuned in to that song, that was Culture by Mob Bounce. Got a few other songs in this episode and a few others. And we are just finishing off our episode on solidarity and allies from hopefully an Indigenous perspective. And we are going to talk about a couple events coming up, important events coming up. And Sam's going to give us the lowdown on that. So go ahead, Sam.
So I think we're going to talk about some current events now. And I think the big one coming up is the powwow. I would say the name. And it's embarrassing because I can't really say it because it's my own language. So my cookum's listening, I'm sorry. So on March 26th on Saturday, it's the second annual powwow put on by the First Nations Student Association. And they need volunteers. And so we've been spending this episode talking about work and being an ally and standing in solidarity. And so if you want some work to do and you can count back change for 50-50 tickets and concession, do we have a job for you? So if you are interested, there is a Facebook page, and it's just volunteer at the second annual... Fuck my life. Anybody else want to say it? Allies in the room? Want to take a shot at this? So volunteer at the second annual Nehiyaw Pasquat Samoan Powwow. There's a Facebook page under that name, and if you want more information, you can email Hannah Lunn, who is a wonderful person, at Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H dot M dot Lunn, L-U-N-N, at gmail.com with any questions. If you find the Facebook page, there's a sign-up sheet. So sign up for when you can come, and I better see you there volunteering because there's cleanup needed from midnight to 2 a.m. So another event that's coming up are the Spark Fireside Talks, which are hosted by the Grunt Gallery, located at the Longhouse at the Native Education College. That's at 285 East 5th Avenue. So every third Thursday, there is an artist giving a talk. So this Thursday coming up at March 17th at 12:15 p.m. to 1 p.m., Lisa Healy, a.k.a. Girl 23, who is an Ojibwe mural artist and an inspirational leader for street youth drop-in culture programs, is giving a talk, and I'm sure she'll be great to check out. She does amazing mural work. And then...
And for those who may not know already, if you go to the Belkin Art Gallery, Bo Dix, All Directions exhibit is on there. So, yeah, go check it out. I'm sure it will be great. Another opportunity to see some of Bo Dix's many amazing works. So make sure to check that out.
Yeah. And then there's also on Saturday, March 19th at the Rio Theater, they're showing the final showing of Haida Gwaii on the Edge of the World, a documentary talking about climate change in Haida Gwaii. I've heard some great things. I've heard some not great things. I'm going to go. I want to know what everybody else is going to think about it. But yeah, it's playing at the Rio Theater and it's its final showing. So check it out.
All right, everyone. So thank you very much for listening to our episode. Maybe a concept you've listened to on multiple occasions, but like we said, an important conversation to kind of have again and again, maybe unfortunately. But I think, I don't know, maybe some questions to leave with or think about. I don't know, maybe for people, you know, fellow settlers who are wanting to work in solidarity, things to think about is, yeah, if you want to enter into this, what is your position? Why are you wanting to kind of be that ally or act in solidarity? Why are you doing it? You should probably really think about yourself and why you're doing that. So maybe you don't kind of barge your way into a community or a space and think about yourself when you're in that space and realize that that space isn't for you. It's mm-hmm. not about you. And you're not there to take the helm. You know, this isn't volunteer hours for your med school application. This isn't.
Damn.
Yeah, honestly, think about why you're doing these sort of things so that when you walk in, hopefully you're there to listen and you learn. And you're maybe you won't be asked in. Maybe you'll go and they'll say, no, not we don't need you here right now. And that's okay, because again, it's not about you. So things to think about.
Yeah, to echo Mitch, can I ask what Mitch now? Wow, thank you all for listening to this episode. I think it shows if you are a confused settler and confused about allyship, I thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. And I sincerely hope you're confused and have no idea what happened, because there's no end. There's really no end. And I really hope that this episode did bring up a lot of questions for you and made you question a lot of things in your life and maybe question a lot of the actions you do. Because I think in the long run, I came into this episode really not wanting it to be a how-to manual. And I really wanted to come into this episode just to question allyship and solidarity. And I think when you leave and when you're sitting there thinking about what you heard, just constantly be self-reflective, constantly ask yourself why you're doing these things, why you want to insert yourself in these positions, and problematize yourself.
Okay, yeah, along those lines, I'd like to say thank you to Musqueam for hosting us, and thank you to Sam and Mitch for participating in the episode. And yeah, if I'm thinking about questions to leave you with, I'd probably reiterate what Sam has said about just problematizing yourself and thinking through the different ways that as settlers, I often hear people talk about ways that like indigenous issues or politics don't aren't a part of like a major part of their life, but as settlers we're all complicit in that and we're all touched by that, and like that is something that we need to confront and we need to think about. And we need to think about how we practice and how we walk through like our lives and exist. So I thank you for taking the time to listen, and hopefully we've left you with some questions that will kind of unsettle you and make you discomfortable. But like I think it's a productive way and a productive means to think through our position on this land.
And I don't think can really stress enough that you should be uncomfortable. You should never be comfortable when you are going through processes of decolonization or you're entering like indigenous spaces as a white settler. You should be uncomfortable and sit with that feeling and really understand why you're feeling that feeling. And also don't get distracted by your white guilt. This is probably mean, but I think white guilt's really funny sometimes. It's hindering. It's important, and you should feel it out, and you should reflect on why you feel guilty or why you feel like that, but just don't let it get distracting and mess up, because you're going to mess up, and someone's going to hand your ass to you, and it's going to be great.
Many thanks, everyone, for listening in, and of course, thank you to both of the people who hosted with me today to have this conversation, and we hope it was useful for you, for whoever it was that listened, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. Take care.
El show de Leo Ramírez, lunes 4 a 5 de la tarde en el 101.9 FM CITR. Delio Ramírez Show, Monday 4 to 5 p.m. at 101.9 FM CITR.
If you or someone you know is experiencing challenges with mental health, there are lots of peer and professional resources available at UBC and in the community.
Kaleidoscope is a peer-run mental health support group on campus that meets every Monday, except statutory holidays, from 5 to 6 p.m. in Buchanan Building B, Room 307.
You can visit our website for updated meeting times and additional mental health resources at the-kaleidoscope.com.
If you live in Vancouver and need immediate help, please phone Mental Health Emergency Services at 604-874-7307 or 1-800-SUICIDE for the rest of British Columbia.
Do you have an approaching test or exam and need help studying? Well, it's time to prepare yourself. The Study Van, www.studyvan.com, is a 100% free website dedicated to helping you achieve excellence. MCAT, History, Chemistry, French, Math, Biology, the Study Van covers it all. Tools are provided so you can create your own study group and do what you need to do. Ace your exam. The Study Van will help you help yourself. Give it a shot. You have nothing to lose, as once again, it is a 100% free studying resource. So remember, when you need to study, go to the Study Van, www.studyban.com.
Howdy, folks. We're the Bitterweed Draw, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
What you feel, there's nothing else you need. Be careful what you do, there's no one watching you. Let your limb take the lead, let your take the lead.